We own this country. We own it. And it's not you owning it and not politicians owning it. Politicians are employees of ours. They're just going to come around and beg for votes every few years, and it's the same old deal. But I just think that it's important that you realize that whether you're Democrat or whether you're a Republican or whether you're Libertarian or whatever, when somebody does not do the job, we've got to let them go.
When your entire culture is under attack, you need the country's number one voice in defense of our American way of life. You need an ally in the fight against tyranny and corruption. You need your weekly dose of Lisa Payne Nager. Missouri Grassroots Radio Network proudly adds our own beauty to America the Beautiful, your own culture vigilante, Ms. Lisa Payne Nager.
Welcome to Culture Vigilante. This week, Obama rewrites Obamacare. He delays the mandate outside of his constitutional authority. Congress raises the debt ceiling. That just happened. The president threw a fabulous, lavish party last night that they called a state dinner, spent gazillions of dollars on it. Everyone is predicting a market crash any time now. Iranian ships are sailing toward the United States. That's always a peaceful thought. Terrorists are sniping at power plants, and the mainstream media is not talking about it. And we're all going to pay a little bit more to federal workers to have increased minimum wage. And happy Wednesday. I can't think of anything nicer to think about on this Wednesday. You're listening to Culture Vigilante. This is Lisa Payne Nager. I'm here with Cindy McGee. It just never seems to end. We have a lot of stuff to talk about tonight. Cindy.
Yes.
We've been talking for the last couple of weeks about how we just ought to have a show about just kind of what's going on, because you and I usually prior to the shows are always hashing out the current events. Well, tonight
right.
We're going to do that. One of the things that we are going to talk about, though, later, very, very soon in the show is the militarization of your local police departments. This is a story that's been developing for the last many couple of years. Tanks have been shipped in to little municipal police departments across the country. We're hearing more and more stories about police SWAT teams invading people's houses for very minor reasons at all. And we're just seeing more and more as time goes by, military-style police against the citizens. We're going to have Jackie Walker on in a little while to talk about that. And she's done a lot of research on this, and she's going to fill us in on what's going on and why this is happening. And then later we're going to have Mark Messmer on. He's been on the program before. He was one of the two arrested on the St. Charles Overpass late last year for holding holding a peaceful demonstration, and they were arrested and held without charges for a weekend. And he'll be back on with us to talk a little bit about the militarization of the police department and Oath Keepers. But, Cindy, can you believe what's going on? I don't even know where to start.
It's pretty stunning that you and I talk about this sometimes, you look at the headlines and you're just stunned at the things that you're seeing.
Yeah.
And, not to be redundant with this, because I think we all feel this way, but you just I'm constantly going, I just don't recognize my country anymore. I honestly don't. I never in my wildest dreams thought that I would have a reason to fear living in the United States. And I'm fast reaching that point. I'm there. Where, when I look at the things that are happening and the things that are being done, and I see a few good people who have been elected in Washington, D.C., trying to stand up to all of this, to no avail. Everything seems to be falling on deaf ears. We have so many people, that carry that espouse patriot credentials who aren't doing anything. They aren't showing up. I don't know, Lisa. It's pretty, you know, it's bad times. And this militarization of our police is pretty scary. And it's getting worse by the day. I don't know if it's partly because more stories are starting to be covered about it. Maybe, you know, I sometimes go, well, maybe it's not as bad as we think. Maybe this has been going, but that really isn't a comfort, to be honest with you, to think that it's been going on for a long time and not getting reported at all. And if that's true, then we're further down this road than we even thought. So that's not a comfort.
30 years ago or 50 years ago or when we were kids, you know, you never would have guessed that these kinds of things would have been going on. Police brutality was a big issue, and you didn't have it. You know, there was no such thing as police. Police brutality was just totally scrutinized, and there was a lot more transparency, and you didn't have that kind of thing. And this kind of thing where police are storming in on people with SWAT teams.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, there was an article. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm going to try to find. There was an article here. I live in the St. Louis area, and there was an article. Let's see. There was a SWAT team that, and we still don't know why, but there was a SWAT team that busted in on a St. Louis family, a SWAT team. We don't know why. I mean, you know, as far as we know, they didn't carry out massive amounts of weapons or drugs from the home, or, you know, it was never followed up on, so we don't know why. But in the St. Louis area, the SWAT team just came in and just busted in on a home. The neighbors didn't know anything about what was going on. You know, there was no shooting or hostage situation or, you know, I mean, I can understand. I mean, if, you know, I'm sure there are reasons why you need a SWAT team, but I just don't think you need to go into a subdivision in the St. Louis area and bust in on a family with a SWAT team. You know, if they were doing something illegal, go get them, but a SWAT team.
Well, and thing, too, that I think is concerning along with this is that it's the fact that our government is selling for pennies on the dollar very expensive, very modern, very good military-style equipment. Our nation is so far in debt, it's not even funny, and yet they're all but giving this equipment away to local police departments around the country. Why aren't they just repurposing that with the military or selling it for a price that can recoup our tax dollars, thank you very much, to go towards paying down our federal debt instead of helping to militarize the police department, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it, too, if we all remember, Obama said during his 2008 bid for president that he wanted a domestic
police force, army.
That would be as well-trained, as well-equipped, and as big as our military. Well, I'm beginning to think this is, you know, I think this is
what
we're doing.
Okay, so you and I, before the show, we were chit-chatting before we went on the air, and we were kind of talking about the state of affairs. You know, I think people are aware, probably there are a lot of people that are aware of what's going on. I don't think it's the majority of the people. I think the Tea Party, you know, started this revolution, and people are aware, and there are a lot of people that know what's going on. Out of that group of people, I do not understand with the awareness that there is out here about these kinds of things like the police issues and all of these other issues, why we cannot get more involvement, why we cannot spread this information farther and wider, even with the internet that we have, why we have not been able to reach outside our own sphere and grow this information. I don't understand it. And we were talking a little bit before the show about it is just so hard to get people to get involved. Now, I'm an admin on a Facebook page called The Patriot Nation. Mm-hmm. It's a great Facebook page. They have a great website, and they put out a lot of very good information. I mean, if you want to know about what's going on with the underbelly and the undercurrent of what's going on in the country, you can get it there at the Patriot Nation. It's very informative. And they reach millions of people every day. I mean, you can reach folks. Let me see if I can get up here and find out how many people they're reaching today. They were at one time reaching, you know, 30 or 40 million people a day. It was huge. And Facebook kind of changed their algorithms and things changed a little bit, but they're still reaching millions of people a day. And most of the people on that page are reading memes and commenting on memes. There are a lot of people that are involved and engaged, and they'll comment on the articles, but the comment on the articles where you actually have to go in and click a link and read is a lot less than the people clicking on the memes. And it's like, you know, most of the people that are following these patriot type pages that are reading, getting their news off the internet instead of from the mainstream media, you know, they're smart people. They get it. I am in a quandary to understand, how do we get those people motivated? How do we get them up off their seats, away from the computer, and start to reach out to the people outside their sphere? Because, I mean, I know, and I have that same thing, too. I live in a suburban area. I don't know most of my neighbors. I know a couple of them. Some of the people that I know, they know who I am and what I do. For the most part, the people here are very busy taking their kids to soccer practice, and, you know, they don't have a clue that I do a radio show from my house every Wednesday night. They don't know how deeply involved I am in politics, and it's just really hard to get that word out there. I mean, I don't make any bones about it. I tell people about it. But they just don't seem to want to engage. I don't get it. I mean, they're not feeling the pain, I guess, enough.
Yeah. That, or, you know, something else that it might be that I think it could be, because I know a lot of people that I talk to, they're very aware of what's happening, but they're not engaged in the fight. And I keep, you know, Lisa, I honestly think a lot of people are they keep falling back on the normalcy bias, where, yes, they see everything. Yes, they're concerned on a certain level. They've processed the threats that we're facing, but they're reverting to that normalcy bias, that part of us that, you know, when an airplane flies into the building next to you, that, or into your building, that you, instead of leaving the building and getting out of the building right now, you go back to your desk and you start shutting down your computer and you start going through all of those motions of things that you do every day and that you think you're supposed to do, instead of acting appropriately and getting the heck out of the building. You know, right. A lot of people did that on 9/11, and it's what they refer to as the normalcy bias. And people do that. And, you know, I'm concerned that that's what people are doing, that they're resorting to, and I'm talking about the people who are informed, who do know that there's a problem, and they're just resorting to that normalcy bias. They're not getting involved because they're, for whatever reason, psychologically, they're falling back on that. They're falling back on that defense mechanism.
You know, here's another thing, too, that I kind of wanted to bring up tonight. One of my fellow politichicks on politichicks.tv published an article today, and it was entitled, What Say You? Should Felons Have Rights Restored? And I posted this on the Patriot Nation. I posted it on Culture Vigilante and on my own Facebook page. And I cannot believe the myriad of responses I got. And I think this speaks to why we have a problem in this country, because I think we have generations of people who grew up in this country disengaged from the education about how this government is supposed to work. Okay, so this article was about, you know, should felons have their rights restored after they've served their time? And I think you and I, we're going to go down a road here that I'm not sure we're ready to go down yet, but we'll jump, we'll go. I think a lot of the deal is people have assigned a degree to a degree of severity to different felonies. And I think there's a right and there's a wrong here. But it used to be, if you were convicted of a felony, that was a big deal. You lost your right to vote. You lost your right to carry a gun. You lost your rights to do a lot of things. okay, because a felony was a huge deal. And a lot of people made the point, and I would agree, that, well, everything's a felony now. You know, everything's a big damn deal. The government's gotten so big and so intrusive that, you know, sneezing in the wrong direction is a felony, and, you know, and why should you carry that? Why should you carry that load around? A lot of it of the pushback against this is it's a felony. You know, if you get busted for pot possession, it's a felony. And you know, Cindy, how I feel about that. It's a felony, and drugs are bad, and I think it should stay a felony. A lot of people are pushing back, thinking, well, pot possession, it's no big deal. You shouldn't have to lose your right to vote because you got busted for pot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, my take on this entire situation is, first of all, the subsequent generations after me, you know, I'm not exactly a spring chicken, but the subsequent generations after me grew up, and even I grew up kind of, you know, I did not get the education in high school about what my government was supposed to be for me. And,
right.
and I think it diminished over the, you know, as time went on. Those people following me got even less. And a lot of people don't even know, you know, the difference between a felony and a misdemeanor and, you know, what your state government penalties are and your federal government penalties are. And there's just a big disconnect there. But I think what the biggest disconnect is a character situation where, you know, if most people know the difference between right and wrong, you know. Let's take the pot example. It's just one example. I'm not singling it out. But you know that it's illegal to have pot.
Uh-huh.
And you made a choice to do it anyway.
Right.
Now, whether or not you think it's a big deal to have pot is not the issue. The issue is you made the choice to go ahead and smoke pot or possess pot when you knew it was illegal. And you were convicted of it, and you are supposed to hopefully bear the consequence of that. You didn't have to do it.
Right.
If you don't like the law, engage and get it changed.
Right. Another thing too is, do we really need to change? I'm going to throw this out here, just because we're opening this up for discussion, and it's something that I've thought about often, because I think that, well, it, maybe the discussion doesn't need to be we should legalize pot to avoid felony. You know, maybe what we need to do is reevaluate our penal system and how we assign degrees of not guilt, because if you're found guilty of a crime, you're found guilty of a crime, but the level of crime. Do you know what I'm saying?
But we have that already. You know,
what I'm saying is that it's like you said a little bit earlier on, you know, it's getting to the point where everything that you do that's wrong is a felony. If you sneeze at the wrong time, it's a felony. And maybe that's the problem is that our penal system is not, we've lost all of our common sense when it comes to dealing with all of it.
Have always said, well, I mean, this is a legislative thing. Okay, legislatures assign the penalty, okay, but the judiciary, too. I mean, I've always said, you know, while we're busy watching the executive and legislative branches of government, the judiciary is really busily at work sawing the legs off the table, and nobody's watching them.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, you've got judiciaries on a local, state, and federal level who are working as hard as they can on every level to undermine our government. And they're doing it intentionally.
Right.
You know, and nobody's
right.
even watching them. We're all busy watching the other two legs of the table, you know, not work properly. So, so even if you have legislation that is put through properly, you've got the judiciary undermining that in every way that they can think of, and there are no consequences for them, which there are, but nobody's watching them.
Well, exactly. You've got brutal rapists that are being let off with
absolutely
nothing whatsoever. That judge a couple of years ago, in the last couple of years, that let that guy off that was a repeat offender. Oh, I wish I'm not recalling the details very clearly. Do you recall that story kind of maybe where the judge just let this guy walk with a slap on the wrist. He didn't even serve any time. And he said that the time that he was in jail leading up to the hearing or the trial, the judge counted that as his time served and just put him on, he just got let go.
Oh, I think that happens
and
a
then,
lot.
And then in other places, you have people who are let's take the pot thing, because I do not favor legalizing pot, and I do think that there should be stiff penalties for infringement of illegal use and possession of drugs that are not legal. And I don't want to go into that right now, but someone going to prison for 10 years for smoking pot or being in possession of pot, and then you juxtapose that against a violent rapist that's just let go by a judge who has, he had all kinds of excuses for what he did.
Absolutely.
And just let this guy go. I mean, it stretches your ability to, we've lost our common sense in this country, and our court system, our judges, our legal system is as messed up as our government is right now.
Right, absolutely.
It really is a problem.
Yep, it's pretty bad, and I'm not quite sure how to handle it, except that I think that we have to get...
It has to be handled carefully. We can't be doing knee-jerk stuff, This whole legalized marijuana thing, some of the reasons behind that are so...
And it's not just the marijuana thing. It's a lot of other issues.
No.
I don't want to single marijuana out specifically. But, a couple of weeks ago, there was a story about a 16-year-old kid, I think it was in Florida, who was drunk and killed four
mm-hmm.
people, and he walked.
Mm-hmm.
He killed four people. I mean, his
right.
life should never be the same. He made the choice to drink and drive and do whatever and drive, and he killed four innocent people, and he walked. He's going to be free. He's not going to have any restrictions on his life. He's going to get over it, maybe serve probation or do whatever, go to rehab, whatever, and he's going to be free. Here's my point, though. I we've said this before, liberty is messy, and
mm-hmm.
it's not always
it
convenient, and it doesn't always feel good. And if you're looking for utopia,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to find it. Stop looking for utopia.
No.
Because sometimes you have to be, the tough love has to fall. And,
right.
if you get busted for pot, or if you shoot somebody, or if you rape somebody, or if you make a conscious choice to break the law, somebody should throw the book at you. That's how it should be done. If you don't like the law and you find it to be unfair, the way to go about taking care of that is to get it changed, and we have a process for doing that. And if you're finding that you cannot get it changed and there are enough people who have a problem with that, then we need to hold those people accountable who will not change the law. We have just eroded the system so much, taken the easy way out, become complacent, that we are not – we have totally turned over our rights and our responsibilities to manage a perfect system that was given to us more than 200 years ago.
Right. Liberty, and something else that I would like to add to this too, Lisa, for people to just chew on. Liberty is not license. Liberty is not freedom. That's not what liberty is. Liberty is not freedom to do whatever you want to do, whenever you want to do it, however you want to do it. It's not licensed to do anything that you darn well please, and the consequences be darned. It's liberty comes with a lot of responsibility, and like you said, it's a messy
right.
business.
Right.
And our founders never intended liberty to be licensed, and they understood that liberty practiced that way leads to anarchy. That is the inevitability of where you go with that. And I love a quote from John Adams when he said, "Avarice, ambition, revenge, or gallantry would break the strongest cords of our Constitution as a whale goes through a net. Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other." which goes back to this idea that you and I have been talking about, that, you know, and I think in a roundabout way that's kind of what we've been saying, our entire society is breaking down, and everybody has lost their moral compass. And
yep.
we're starting to have people espousing an anything-goes society to rectify the wrongs and injustices against our constitutionally guaranteed rights and liberties, and we're abandoning common sense, and that leads to anarchy.
Yep, and or tyranny.
Or tyranny.
And we're
well,
so close.
Anarchy always leads to tyranny because the people will start crying out for anyone to step in and fix it.
Right. Yeah, which is another discussion that we should have sometime soon. I've had this discussion with several people, and they get so angry with me. But the reality is, even patriots, I think it's human nature, it's human sociology, that people just really want to follow. Most of us, I mean, and I would be guilty of that as well. There have been times in my life where I just want somebody to tell me what to do. I don't want to make the decision. I just want somebody to tell me what to do. And I think that most of the people in the middle of the bell curve are really like that. I think the liberty-loving people and the liberals and progressives are all people, and nobody understands that better than the progressives. They just want somebody to lead them, to tell them what to do, that they're going to take care of it. And that's why we have just given away our responsibility, given away our freedom, because we've had people like Barack Obama come in, and you could just see it if you look back at the campaign. Help me fundamentally change the foundation of America. In 5 days, we're going to change the foundation of America. You know, hope and change. Hope and change. I mean, it was just perfect.
And that's where personal responsibility is important. And following the laws of our land are important, just laws of the land. And that's why we have now, what we're getting ready to go into with the militarization of our police and the overreach of power and the abuse of power that we see taking place in our government. Part of the reason for that, Lisa, is because people just expect somebody else to fix everything for them.
Right.
And they have built this wall of immunity around themselves that it's never going to be their door that's going to be knocked on by some SWAT team that has no business being in their home. After all, I'm a good law-abiding citizen. I don't do anything wrong.
Right.
And they just put the shutters on, they just put the blinders on.
Yeah,
and
until
they just want somebody to be there that they can call to come take care of them when things go bad, and they don't pay attention to the abuses that are taking place.
Exactly. That's a great segue. Let's take a break, and we will be back with Jackie Walker to talk about this issue of the militarization of our police.
It really is time for the people of America to take up pitchforks.
On September 15, 1787, the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia took up debate on whether or not to allow amendments to the new Constitution and, if so, what method of amending should be adopted. Initially, it was proposed that only the legislature could make an amendment. Quoting from James Madison's notes of that very day, Colonel Mason thought the plan of amending the Constitution exceptionable and dangerous, as the proposing of amendments is in both the nodes to depend in the first immediately, in the second ultimately, on Congress. No amendments of the proper kind would ever be obtained by the people if the government should become oppressive, as he verily believed would be the case. Unquote. There followed a strenuous debate and many propositions, motions, votes, and refinements that arrived at the article as it exists today, giving states and the people the power to meet to amend the Constitution with no regard for the legislature or executive. The time that Mason foresaw, the time of oppressive national government, has arrived. Join us on Monday night in the Hour of Truth as we explore this method of peaceful revolution. We'll discuss how, when, and why. And we will be glad to hear your opinions on exactly what we need to do to fix the issues we face today, using Article 5 of the Constitution. Can we? will we take our government by the horns, wrestle it to the ground, and return our republic to a government that serves the states and the people. Let's talk about it. Mondays, 7 p.m., the Hour of Truth. Call and participate on the studio line 347-677-1835.
So dear, for peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
We're back. This is Lisa Payne Nager. I'm here with Cindy McGee, and you are listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. We're here every Wednesday night, and tonight the big subject is the militarization of the police. And you can surf the internet. There are tons of stories about it on the internet. There, for quite some time, you've been hearing things about that. And it just seems to be getting worse. Tonight we have with us Jackie Walker. She is a patriot in the St. Louis region, has done quite a bit of research on this issue, and she's going to give us a little background on what this is, how it got started, and what folks can look for, and how it's going to affect you. Jackie, thank you so much for agreeing to be with me tonight.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Okay, this is a huge issue, and I've seen it in small ways in my region. Later on, Mark Messmer is going to be back on with us, and I interviewed him last summer when there was an overpass issue. Some people, you know, he was one of the people that got arrested and was detained in jail for the entire weekend without being charged with anything because he was part of a peaceful demonstration in the St. Charles County area near St. Louis. And this was a minor thing compared to what we're seeing across the country. Can you give me some background on what this militarization thing is with the police and how and why it's kind of escalated?
I can go back and give you some history about when it started. And basically, we have to really go back about three decades ago to the late 60s, early 70s, when the first SWAT team, and SWAT stands for Special Weapons and Tactic, but the first SWAT team was developed in the early 1960s, or actually the first one was in 1969 in L.A., and then in the 70s it escalated, and we had over 500 by 1975 across the country. And during that time, there was another trend that was happening besides the SWAT teams being developed. It was the declaration of the war on drugs by Nixon. And the SWAT teams were originally developed as a reaction to the riots and the violent protest groups such as the Black Panthers, the Symbionese Army, and mass shooting incidents such as the Texas Clock Massacre in 1966. But again, at the same time, Nixon was declaring an all-out war on the drugs, and since then we've seen a 1,500% increase in the use of SWAT teams over the last two decades.
How much was that?
A 1,500% increase in the use of SWAT teams.
Oh, my God.
Over the last two decades. And originally, the SWAT teams, again, were developed for, you know, reactions to riots and violent protests. And they were originally only supposed to be used if there was an immediate threat or danger to life. But now we're starting to see them, it's gradually built up during the 80s, where we're using them on a daily basis.
Oh, my God.
They're policies, and it hasn't just been liberals or conservatives that have been passing these policies. It's been both sides. But anyway, policies such as no-knock raids, federal agents storming private homes, and you would see things on the TV or in the news reports of where they've gone in and brought out all the, you know, the drugs. You'll see this large stash of drugs, you know, that they captured. But for the most part, that, those were just for show. It wasn't for diminishing the drug supply.
Mm-hmm.
Because what they do when they're doing these drug raids is, and I have firsthand knowledge of that because of a relative of mine worked in the DEA at one time. But what they'll do is they'll sit outside like the drug houses or wherever the, you know, the drugs are being shipped in and then, you know, sold on the streets and stuff. They will wait until all the drugs are gone but all the money is in the house, because once the drugs are gone, the money's in the house, and they go in there, they get that, those police departments get that money. And then the federal government gets...
Why do they get
so
the money?
They get the money,
and
that's their incentive. Yes.
Right. Jackie, didn't they, this is Cindy, they passed, the Congress passed a law years ago that gave, I forget what it's called, and you're probably going to know, but where they, under the law, they are allowed to confiscate whatever property and money that they confiscate in a drug raid, they get to keep. The police department keeps the money, like you said, for their local community, and then the any land grab goes to the federal government. And,
correct.
And that has led to, I think, that is one of the big, that needs to be rescinded. That should not be allowed to happen, because that is incentive for doing the wrong thing by these
right.
departments, I think. And I think that's what it's come down to.
Yes. Yeah, it's really not about diminishing the drug supply on the street.
Right.
It's about going and getting the money, because they wait until it's sold, and then they go in there when they know that the money's going to be there, you know, or the cars or whatever. They know they're going to be able to confiscate that money, and then, of course, the property is seized. In order for them to perform all these no-knock raids and stuff like that, they started, you know, the SWAT teams, they used the excuse that, oh, we have to have more equipment because the drug dealers have better equipment than we do. But there's no data that exists that shows it was a widespread problem. And there was a study done in 1991. Now, this was by a Libertarian Independent Institute group, where it showed that less than 1% of homicides were committed with military-grade weapons. And another study done by the Justice Department in 1995 and another study by the National Institute for Justice in 2004, they both had similar conclusions. And overwhelmingly, the majority of crimes are committed with handguns. They're not using military-style weapons to go after the police officers who are doing these no-knock raids, or, you know, the drug dealers mostly have handguns. Now, some people will say, well, what about, you know, the drug cartels in Mexico? Well, we had Fast and Furious, and it came out that our own government was providing those weapons to them. Again, I don't know. I have a little bit of a conspiracy mind. You know, maybe that was to justify the militarization, you know, to continue the justification of the militarization of our police force. I don't know, but so
could have been for quite a few reasons, actually. I'm sorry, didn't mean to interrupt you. So what we're seeing now, though, in the most recent months, there have been news stories, not in the mainstream media, but you can find internet stories about it on internet news about towns, small towns even, getting tanks.
Yes.
and weaponry. What in the heck is that all about?
Well, that came about mostly after 9/11, when the Department of Homeland Security developed their grant program. They're providing, well, they're $35 billion, much to purchase military gear, has been given out to the police departments. And it's so lucrative now that defense contractors are turning to the police departments, you know, for them to purchase their equipment and all that. And then other companies were created solely to sell military-grade weaponry and supplies to the police department. So we now have a whole new industry whose sole function is to militarize our police force. And when that's happening, you have you get lobbyists that are up there either going against it to reform it or going that they want this to happen. And so they're using our tax money to lobby for this money. In 2011, the Pentagon gave away over $500 million in equipment to the police departments alone. So that's what's happening, is the government is giving them the goodies. They're giving the incentive is for them to go in and get the money out of the drug wars, and the justification to the public is that it's for their safety. And plus, it's become a big business.
Wow. That is just amazing. So they're going in there, they're collecting all the booty from the drug raids, keeping that money. And so when they get all these, I mean, because it's huge money, if they're going in and busting up these drug rings, they're getting huge money. Where's that money going? I mean, what are they doing with it?
Purchasing millet. Well, if we had a sheriff that was running for office in Lincoln County, Missouri, and fortunately for us, he did not become the sheriff. I absolutely love the sheriff that we have now. But the one that was running, he explained to us that the police department is a business, and it has to be run as a business, and they have to have this money to run it as a business. But when you're employing and have a payroll of drug task force and SWAT teams and other things that really are not about serving and protecting the American people, well, you have to get the money from somewhere, because you can't keep going to the taxpayers for it, because they're not going to pay for it.
So,
and it's going to purchase the military equipment. It's going to purchase the military gear that isn't being given away for free. So, you would have to actually ask someone who runs a police department or a sheriff's department the exact details of that, but they have to fund their jails and their payroll somehow.
Man. Okay, so, I mean, we live in the same region, and I'm hearing constantly from my sheriff's departments that they cannot go in and bust these crack houses because, for one reason or another. They know where they are. They can't go in and get them for one reason or another. But if they're going in and making huge, big financial hauls on these drug busts, I would think they want to bust the heck out of them, unless they're worried about stopping it and cutting off their cash flow.
Is it really that they can't or that they won't? Is it really not that big of a drug bust? Or is it not really much? And I don't know if I should use this word or not, but is it really a big booty call for them?
Well, that's my question. Yeah, they're not going to go to the single guy who's just cooking meth in his kitchen. You know, they're not going to bother with that because they're what's in it for them?
It's really not the war on drugs is really not. Maybe the intention of it was. I could never go back and prove that it wasn't, but the policies speak for themselves. But the intention currently is really not to get the drugs off the street. It's not designed that way. And that's why we're not seeing a decrease in the drugs. We're seeing more and more of it. They target marijuana because if the money, meth and crack, the meth and they target the marijuana because the meth and the crack doesn't gain them enough money.
Wow. That's amazing. Okay, so let's talk about, so we have, small town USA has got a tank in their arsenal, little podunk towns here and there. I mean, I know we have some here in Missouri, and I'm hearing about it all over the country. So, What does that do for us now as average Joe citizens? What do we need to start looking out for? I mean, this is frightening, the fact that they have this. But with the overreach of government being what it is now, with Obama becoming king, and I have attended Tea Party rallies and very peaceful demonstrations where they have got armed Homeland Security folks driving up in their Homeland Security trucks to monitor our activity. What do we need to be talking about next?
Well, what we need to be talking about is the culture that has been created within the police departments and within our law enforcement. I don't see that this is ever going to be solved, like, through the legal system, through the Supreme Court, because the Supreme Court has gutted the Fourth Amendment in the name of the drug war since the early 1980s. They're not going to come back and say this is a violation of Fourth Amendment, to be doing the no-knock raids, which we can talk about that a little bit, too.
Yeah.
And then people also ask about the Posse Comitatus Act of 1878, where, you know, our troops are not supposed to be, we're not supposed to have a standing military enforcing law on the streets. But that only prohibits the federal marshals from enlisting active duty soldiers from law enforcement, and the president or Congress, they could pass a law or an executive order tomorrow to enforce drug laws. So this would not, and I don't know if I'm getting off track here,
but this would not violate
the Posse Comitatus Act. So that's, a lot of people ask about that, about having military on our street. What it does, though, by if the president, and what they're currently doing anyway, by being militarized and using these war toys on us, it actually violates the spirit of the Posse Comitatus Act and what it was originally intended for. So I don't see that we're going to get it taken care of through the Supreme Court or the political system like that. But the good news is the public is waking up. And when these tactics were first started being used, they were being used in the inner city on more poor people. But now they're going in and they're doing these raids not only for drugs, they're going into, for instance, there's an example where they were having a bet about the football game and it was overheard in the bar. And two people betted, and anyway, they went in there and busted him in a raid and took his money because he was illegally gambling. So they're doing it to poker games. They're going into bars. They're going to organic farms where they're selling raw milk and into family co-ops.
Yeah.
And even people suspected of white-collar crimes. So the good news is people are waking up to it, and like you said, you're seeing an escalation of it, which there is an escalation, but it's been going on for 30 years. We're just now seeing it. And now these people, they have the means and the status to speak out, and that's drawing the attention in. And what we need to do as a public is we need to get the word out to the people in our community that this is unacceptable, and we need to have a sheriff like we have in Lincoln County. I'm very proud of our sheriff. He is very, except for some things that he does, and him and I have talked about that. But anyway, he won't have SWAT team. He won't hire a SWAT team. If he needs one, he'll get it from the state. But anyway, he is a community person. He wants to be within the community. He wants to involve the community. Our police officers right now are they're separated from the communities that they serve. They're not out on the beat. They're not in the schools. They don't know the names of the principals. Now, in small-town USA, you might see that more a little bit. And they're trained by military instructors as if they're preparing for war against the people. The recruiting videos that they have show them busting down doors and all this other stuff. And the gear and the weapons and the military vehicles are the problem, but the deeper problem is the us versus them mentality that they're being taught. And not only are they being, the culture exists within them, the public is now having the same mentality that it's us against them, because most of them, what they're doing is responding to, they're being antagonistic like responding to calls and DUI checkpoints and checkpoints where they want to collect their saliva and busting
and
down doors and driving military vehicles through our streets and stuff. So, of course, the public is now going to have an us-against-them mentality as well. And that's what we need to do. We need to get out in our communities. We need to start educating people. We need to sit down with our sheriffs and our police departments and explain to them why it is unacceptable and what war are you preparing for that you need an MRAP or an armored personnel carrier. You're here to serve and protect, and you're here to protect and observe our constitutional rights.
Absolutely.
Not to come in and kick down doors of law-abiding citizens who are not committing any violent acts against anybody else.
Right, and follow the letter of the law.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, I mean, we have a constitution, and every state has a constitution. We have a federal constitution. It's not that hard to figure it out. And you don't need a SWAT team and an armored tank to enforce the letter of the law in your community.
You know, three years ago, we sat in a meeting. It was an all-day meeting, and there was a sheriff there from somewhere in Missouri. That's as much as I'll say about who the person is. And he's also involved with Homeland Security and does some other work. And he expressed to us and talked to us in depth about how the training of police officers has changed over the years and how concerning it is the direction they're going in. And you use the exact words he did, Jackie. They're being taught an us against them mentality. They no longer walk the streets of their communities or drive the streets of their communities looking at the average citizen as being just, they're all one and the same, the police officer in the community. Their neighbors and friends. They no longer see us that way. They see us as an enemy. That's how they're trained to look at us now. And that is a huge paradigm shift in how our police officers are supposed to be engaging within the community. And he said it's very dangerous, and it is a militaristic training, type of training that they're undergoing now. And it's very, and he was very concerned about it, and, you know, it's a problem.
Yes, it is definitely a problem because, you know, you're bringing military instruction, and I'm a veteran. My husband serves. He's an active duty soldier, and my son served two tours in Iraq. So we are definitely a military family. But you're having people from the military come in and instruct these people on how to engage people as if they're engaging an enemy. We're not the enemy. We're who you are supposed to be protecting and serving. And some of the tactics that the police departments use, the military soldiers and Marines and sailors, they're not allowed to use on the terrorists.
Right.
But they use them on their own people. It's just like our town. It has been brought to my attention that our police department is trying to obtain an MRAP vehicle,
Explain.
Which is a mine.
Yeah.
An MRAP is a mine-resistant armored personnel vehicle, and I believe it weighs around 35,000 pounds, and it has a turret on it. It's a wheeled tank. It's
and you have a lot of mines in Lincoln County, do you?
I guess we do. I haven't ever heard that we do, but the military is not even allowed to drive that on the public streets where they're at. They've been instructed not to because of the safety issues involved with putting that. It'll topple over. It's unsteady. It tears up the roads. So if our military personnel are not even allowed to drive that on the public streets, why would it be any safer for our police department to do that? I don't even understand why they need a mine-resistant armored personnel vehicle.
Exactly. I mean, unless somebody can convince me that there are some heavily armed sleeper cells housed in these small towns and they need to they need to encompass those sleeper cells and engage in such a way where they need to overtake them in a military style. I don't understand it either. I mean, I cannot think of any situation where we would need anything remotely like that in this country, especially in small town USA. And the amount of money that they're spending when we're $17 trillion in debt in this country, and not to mention the mind control that they're doing on the people, and they're training the staffed officers who are supposed to protect and serve us, the mind control that they're doing against the people that they work for, I'm very frightened. I don't want to see a Homeland Security truck at the Tea Party rally. You know, I don't want to know.
The thing is they're not going to be using those. They're not going to be using those for terrorists. They're going to be using those for every felony warrant and marijuana bust that they can find.
And they're actually using these tactics against innocent people. It's not just people who, which is still wrong, because there is still something, no matter how bad someone turns out to be that they're going into the home of, the basic premise of our law in this country is that we are innocent until proven guilty. And I understand that there need to be procedures in place, that there are bad people that live around us, live with us, that get themselves in trouble, and the police have to go in and they have to deal with those situations at times. But we've completely lost this idea that we're innocent until proven guilty. And now it is you're guilty until you're proven innocent. And that's true of every single American. That seems to be, from where I sit and the things I'm seeing happening now, that is the mentality that is now, that there has been that paradigm shift in the minds of those who are supposed to serve and protect us. It's no longer they're innocent until proven guilty. Everyone around them is guilty until they prove they're innocent in any given situation that the police may engage them in.
The sad part about that is, yes, they see us as guilty until proven innocent. But the thing is the police officers themselves that are going in and actually accidentally killing people or shooting them or shooting their dogs. I don't know if you've seen a whole bunch of that where they just go in and shoot the dogs now. They are not held accountable, and they know they will not be held accountable. They are protected from these things. They will not be prosecuted. And you've seen it. They may have had a couple of high-profile cases on the TV, but as you see in the news, but as you see, those officers usually get off. They don't, because they are not held accountable. They're protected for the crimes that they're actually committing. And I just want to make sure that I get, there's a very good book out there if anybody wants to read it. It's called Rise of the Warrior Cop. It's a very in-depth book with, you can even go look, he gives you links and stuff to go look up his research. And it tells you the whole history. It tells you all kinds of different kinds of raids that have been going on around the country and how people are being killed and how the police are protected from this. It's a very good book. It's called Rise of the Warrior Cop, and it's sold on Amazon. And if you get that book, you'll get a complete understanding of the link between the war on drugs and the militarization of our cops and how it's been justified.
Wow. Oh, I want to bring on Mark Messmer now to kind of bring the sheriff aspect into it, to kind of give people the background and the ideology of what the sheriff situation is supposed to be like. Thanks for coming on with us tonight, Mark. I appreciate you joining me. I know you had a busy night tonight.
Thank you, Lisa, for having me.
Okay, I know that you just joined us, but I know that you know what Jackie's been talking about with all of the militarization, the growth of that in the police forces across the country. Let's talk a little bit about the sheriff situation, and we have touched on it in the last few minutes about the sheriffs and how they're supposed to serve the public. What can you tell us about that issue?
Most of your listeners might not know that the sheriff in your county is the ultimate law authority in your county. So in St. Charles, they're trying to do away with our elected sheriff, who would be responsible to the citizens, and replace him with a countywide police department where the chief of police would be appointed. And
well,
as you know,
that's right, and they've done
position,
it.
Right. Well, they've done it until we can get it back on the ballot to vote next November, and that's where we'll talk about later. But there's a civil liberty issue there for everyone, and you just can't let this happen. This is the most single important issue in St. Charles County right now, and it's just not getting the attention it deserves.
And it's not only happening in St. Charles County. This is a national movement to remove sheriffs and replace them with chiefs of police, and it's going on in every municipality across the country. It's a huge movement because let's punctuate what a sheriff is and how it's different from a police chief.
Sure. I mean, like I said before, in your county, the sheriff has the ultimate decision. If the president wanted to come to your town and the sheriff said, no, we're not going to allow that, he is allowed to tell the federal government, no, they can't do something. They can't do no-knock raids. They can't. Before the IRS can come audit you, the sheriff says yay or nay. They do an investigation to see if it's constitutional, if it's legal for you to do the things you want to do. Under the appointed system, they're just going to be answering to the people who appoint them. And the bureaucracy that's out of control, the tyranny aspect of it. If you have an elected sheriff, they have to answer to the people, and the people will demand that their rights are upheld.
Now, Mark, from what you know, oh, go ahead. Cindy, did you have a question?
I was going to ask him, do you think what – this is Cindy. I'm sitting in with Lisa tonight. Something that occurs to me is that perhaps this effort to do away with elected sheriffs around the country has something to do with the Supreme Court decision in the Sheriff Mack case, where the Supreme Court ruled and upheld that the sheriff is indeed the highest law enforcement authority in the nation.
Well, sure. If you want to do something.
And that is prohibitive to, if you have sheriffs that are willing to stand up like Sheriff Mack to federal overreaches and even state overreaches of power into their local community, and that sheriff stands up and says, no, you're not going to cross my county line, because if you do, I'll throw you in jail. If you've got sheriffs that are doing that in a Supreme Court that's upheld that, one of the right decisions they've made in a long time, then perhaps that, do you think that could be why they're trying to do away with the elected sheriffs, to undermine that reality in our lives?
Most definitely. If you have someone standing up to you and your tyrannical beliefs and you're pushing these on the nation, you have a few speed bumps in the road, you're going to try and disband them first, which is essentially what you're doing when you strip them of their law enforcement duties and make them court bailiffs, like in St. Louis City. They lost their sheriff a long time ago. If you take that person out of the way, you have free reign to do what you want to do. It's also tied into Agenda 21 and the city-county merger that's being discussed, too.
Okay, so, Mark, what do you know of how the militarization of the police or of the sheriff's departments is going over across the country? Because, you know, while the sheriff is the ultimate law enforcement authority, how are they receiving all of this tanks and ammunition and these SWAT teams and everything that is being thrust upon them in their small towns and counties?
Anytime you get a federal grant from the government, there are strings attached to that. It's just not free money given out. There's a program called 1033, which police departments and sheriff's departments alike can receive military equipment used in Afghanistan and Iraq that the federal government no longer wants to pay to hold and maintain. Now, that burden is passed on to the taxpayers when they get that equipment. So they can get an MRAP or some full automatic M16, and they track them very heavily. But then the citizens become on the dime for that. They have to pay the $60,000 a year to maintain those vehicles. And then they're also going to have to justify use for them, so they're going to use them on their SWAT team raids, their drug raids, et cetera. Now, comitatus, I forgot the first part of that. Says that our military,
posse comitatus.
Yeah, that's it, posse comitatus. States that our military cannot police its citizens. But if they militarize the police, then officially, effectively you have military policing its citizens.
That's a perfect little arrangement. Okay, and so again, it goes back to what Cindy and I were talking about at the top of the show, that the citizens have to be responsible for protecting their authority over the government. You can't vote out a police chief if they buy into this police militarization situation, but you can vote out a sheriff. And is that the only way really to deal with this effectively?
Yeah, and with the powers that come along with them, I'm assuming from the Wild West days, you had a sheriff who was the ultimate law enforcement in the county. It only makes sense that you protect that position, that authority. Because, again, you want them to be responsible to the people. If they do something out of line, you can take them out of their seat, you know, replace them with somebody else. And the appointed system, you just can't do that. And it's going to be friends of friends, and, you know, the bureaucracy is just going to run wild. I would like to throw a Facebook group and a website out there for your listeners.
Sure.
This effort is not going as good as it should be. We've had some infighting with the different groups that were trying to collect the signatures. I can update you and tell you we're only about 12% to our threshold of 18,000 signatures to get back on the ballot in November.
Oh.
So when the warm weather comes, we're really going to need some volunteers and boots on the ground to get out and go door to door. And this is not just a willy-nilly door to door. We targeted the certain districts and the amount of votes we need in each district. It's also previous voters that voted in the elections. We bought the voter rolls. So it's not just a blanket spread. It's a targeted effort, and we're getting the people we need to get. And I can tell you 95% of them will sign it and say, I didn't realize that's what I voted for last November. And they're
right.
Very upset. So it's an easy sell. We just need the people to get out there and do it. And when the weather warms up, that's when we're going to kick it in high drive again.
And what's the deadline for getting those signatures collected?
This coming May, I believe.
Ooh, so we don't have a lot of time.
Well, we've had over a year, but you know the low turnout to go door to door in the beginning, et cetera, has really pushed it back into the cold weather. It's just hard to collect in the cold weather. Every group or function I go to, I take it with me, and we get signatures. Like when Chris Ann Hall came to town, I took it there. We got some signatures. You know, there's several of us are just constantly trying to gather signatures because it is a very important issue, and we're under attack every which way but loose. So we have to defend this office of sheriff.
Okay, and that's a huge event. We gave this situation a lot of coverage last year when this was going on, right before the election. Actually, in 12, right before the election when all that happened.
Can I just mention the websites here real
yes,
quickly?
Yes, go right ahead.
On Facebook, it's in Facebook groups. It's St. Charles County Sheriff Preservation Initiative, and it's all together.
Okay.
No spaces or dashes.
Right.
And then on the website, it's www.sheriffpreservation.com, all together, no spaces, no dashes. If
okay.
you go on either one of those websites, anyone can volunteer to help and coordinate the effort or donate monies to support the effort. There's work for everyone to do. So if there's someone that can't really walk, we have a guy that's heading this up that can't walk. He has a prosthetic leg. But he does everything behind the scenes with copies, et cetera, and he keeps us going. So we need everybody, and it's an important issue, and it's the most important issue right now in St. Charles County.
Okay, very good. All right, we will absolutely put that information up at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and my friends at the Patriot Nation are willing to jump on this issue and help get as much publicity out about that as we can. So we'll do everything that we possibly can to get this rolling. I want to thank you both for being with me tonight, Jackie Walker and Mark Messmer.
Lisa.
Yes.
I'm sorry, but there's just one other thing that I'd like to add. There's a hearing being held at 8 a.m. Tomorrow in room number 4 up in Jefferson City for House Bill 1257, and that is the bill, if you're against police and other law enforcement taking part in voluntary alcohol drug testing checkpoints, where they're also doing your saliva, then you should come and join them up at Jefferson City tomorrow. And Representative Ken Wilson is putting forth that bill.
Okay, great. And just to give a little background on that bill, because we had an issue like that here in St. Charles County, there have been roadblocks, and it's not just happening in Missouri. This kind of thing is happening across the country, where there have been roadblocks where your DNA is being sampled involuntarily the law enforcement officers are coming, are taking samples of your DNA either for drug testing or for just various research issues, and it's become quite intrusive. And people do not understand that they have the right to refuse these things. And so I was not aware of this bill that was introduced. Do you want to talk a little bit about that, Jackie?
Missouri House Bill 1257, it prohibits any member of the state highway patrol or local law enforcement agency or employee of the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration from collecting breath, blood, alcohol, or saliva for research purposes. And, again, that was introduced by Representative Wilson.
And may I interject and ask if there's a witness form for that, Jackie? Because that's how you get
yes.
the power of the people.
Yes, there is
a witness
form for that, and that's through the CISPA, the sheriff's, the CISPA, C-S-P-O-A. And I can get you that link to that.
Go ahead. And if you send me a link, I will post that information up on MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. I'll do that tonight if you can send me that link. And folks
okay.
can, and we'll get that up on the Facebook page as well as the website for folks to get that
Lisa,
information.
Lisa, I have
up.
One quick story for you, too, real quick.
Please go ahead. No
mind.
Hurry. Go ahead. Plenty of time.
On your power, to show you the evidence of the power grab, the other night coming home from a constitutional, a liberty-minded group, I was pulled over, and I noticed that it was a park ranger behind me before I got pulled over. The power grab is so evident that park rangers are pulling people over now. And he pulled me over, and I said, can I help you? Yeah, park rangers in St. Charles County. Actually, St. Pierre's City was where it was at.
Oh,
I said, can I help you? He said,
that,
you have a license plate light out. And I said, well, I know a few park rangers. I know you guys are first-class police officers, licensed police officers. But because you have ranger on your car doesn't mean you go around policing the public. You should police the parks. And if you're going to do that, it should say police on your car and not ranger. I don't know what the legality is, and I'm checking into it. But I just found that was a massive power grab, and our park rangers don't need to be initiating traffic stops.
It seems, like almost every aspect. I mean, we have the Department of Homeland Security. You have your regular police force. You have sheriff's departments. And even if you, I mean, there have been stories on the internet about how the park rangers and it escapes me now, but other departments of federal departments are gathering military ammunition and just going way outside their scope of what they're supposed to be doing. So. You know, in St. Peter's, it doesn't surprise me that you got pulled over in St. Peter's. It's kind of, if you live in St. Peter's, you know what I'm talking about. So
yes, I asked that park ranger if that was legal. He said, I've already done it 5 times today. And just because you're doing doesn't make
but you
it right.
Said it, right, exactly. Who gives you the authority?
Where did he
President
get that authority?
Obama? did he say that he had the authority, or has he just been, watching the news?
He just insinuated that because he's licensed to the state as a first-class police officer that he is able to do that. But I don't think that, rangers have the authority through our state to pull people over and conduct traffic stops. I just don't believe that is allowed. And I have to do some research on it, but that flabbergasted me.
Please check back with me. Let me know what you find. I would be very interested to know how that works out. That would be awesome.
Did you also want me to update you on the overpasses event?
I do, actually. Okay, so let's give a little history. Late last summer, I think it was, there was a peaceful demonstration on an overpass in St. Charles County. You and Dr. Dwayne Weed were part of that event. It was and it was peaceful. I mean, there was I was there. There was nothing going on except people holding signs on an overpass to advertise impeach Obama, and take it from there, Mark.
We were told that we were creating a traffic hazard and accidents below, which in fact was from the biggest event in St. Charles County of the year. It's a festival of Little Hills, and it was causing traffic to back up at a dead stop onto the highway. And all the accidents, or fender benders, I should say, were in the slow lane. And I argued with the officers or the troopers there and said, apparently it's not us. We're on both sides of the highway. If we were the distraction, then it would be on both sides of the highway, but it's only been on the one where the traffic's backing up from the biggest festival in St. Charles County of the year. We were arrested and detained, only to come out find out later we did not break any laws, so there were no arrest place. So basically, Doc and I were kidnapped for 24 hours, which is a maximum hold that anybody can be held in jail until they get a warrant search. So we were kidnapped and detained for 24 hours, and we're seeking civil litigation. I'm happy to report that we are in negotiations with one of the two biggest civil liberties lawyers in the nation, and we're going to proceed forth with a suit.
Awesome. Awesome. Did they give you any prognosis for what they think is going to happen here?
No, but typical cases like this throughout the nation have remained, we can't talk, have ended in civil violations and monetary awards towards the people who are kidnapped and detained.
Well, good, good.
I was
absolutely
treated worse than any DWI driver. I mean, we had a DWI guy there that got pulled over for DWI and arrested. Mm-hmm. He slept it off on the bench and was sent home. Meanwhile, we were held for 24 hours and made to change out fingerprint, voice recognition system, which is new in St. Charles County. Oh, yes, this power grab is unbelievable. Everybody thinks that when you talk about things that are out of control, you're conspiracy theorists, but you have to wake up and see what's going on, people. The new voice system in St. Charles County maps your voice. They have you recite the lyrics to a Beatles song, and then at the end repeat United States 3 times. What they're doing is voice mapping your voice. So now they have my voice. If I'm on the phone, they know who I am. They also have the 3D imaging software when they take your booking photo. So I have been put into the system under this kidnapping and legally held against my will.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I had no idea. Okay. That's another thing to write Tim Jones about, voice mapping. And we knew about the biometric photos.
Biometric.
Didn't know about the voice mapping. Oh my gosh. Okay. Awesome. All right.
Well, thanks again, Lisa, for having me on the show. And I just want to get your listeners out there. People, we can't sit on our butts anymore. This is the reason why our country is the way it is. We have to get out and do something about it.
Yep. We've got to get engaged, folks. You can't just post on Facebook and complain. You really got to get out there and start talking to your neighbors and become engaged. Absolutely. Mark Mesper and Jackie Walker, thank you so much. I hope you'll come back and keep us posted. And great information to have. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll be talking to you soon. We're going to take a quick break, and Cindy and I will be right back.
You live here?
Yes.
Well, maybe you know what a zombie is.
When a person dies and is buried, it seems there's certain voodoo priests who have the power to bring him back to life.
Horrible.
It's worse than horrible because a zombie has no will of his own. You see them sometimes walking around blindly with dead eyes, following orders, not knowing what they do, not caring.
You mean like Democrats?
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners. Show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
Hello, it's Dave, and I'm here to tell you that on Saturday nights at 7 o'clock, we talk about the Fair Tax on the Fair Tax Show. That's Saturday night at 7 o'clock on Missouri Grassroots Radio. We explode the myths. We tell the truth. We get to the bottom of this tax code that ought to be the one to replace the IRS. Get involved in the discussion. Learn everything there is to learn. 347-677-1835, Saturday, 7 o'clock p.m., Missouri Grassroots Radio.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
We're back. This is Lisa Payne-Nager. You're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I am joined here tonight by Cindy McGee of Show Me Patriots. That was a pretty incredible segment. I hope people share this link with their friends. The voice recognition thing, you know, we have had an issue here in Missouri. We had a big issue last summer and last legislative session with our Department of Revenue switching out all of their equipment so that they could take biometric photos, and they were sending all of our information to not Homeland Security, but MorphoTrust, who in turn is sending it to Homeland Security. And they, you know, did this big bogus investigation, and the governor admitted to complying with Real ID and all kinds of crazy stuff that was never, nothing ever came of it because the Republicans let them off the hook. We knew about all that. That was a mess, but nothing about the voice recognition stuff. So that's pretty nasty, and we need to look into that for sure. Lots of stuff to talk about still tonight. We were going to go into some other issues. I do kind of want to clear something up because when I posted the advertising for the link on tonight's show, I think I mentioned that Blunt, they raised the debt ceiling again today, and I thought that Senator Blunt was one of the yes votes in the Senate to do that. I was wrong. That was incorrect. Senator Blunt did not vote yes to raise the debt ceiling, although there were a lot of crummy Republican House members that did. And we have some of those votes. Cindy, did you get that link that I sent
you?
No.
Yes.
Yes, I did. So as we speak, we're going to continue to raise the debt ceiling. And we have some lovely, lovely Republicans that were in on it. The vote was 221 to 201 to raise the debt ceiling in the Congress, and it was much, it was right along party lines in the Senate. So anyway, I think it's the Congress that we can throw tomatoes at tonight for raising the debt ceiling. It's their responsibility. Thank you, John Boehner.
The leadership in both sides, both the Senate and the in Congress, the leadership in both branches, they got on board with it and they helped facilitate it and make it happen.
Yeah, with no conditions. I mean, they just slid it through, greased it with butter, and slid it right through.
Nope. Obama doesn't have to give anything, and we're going to go even further in depth than we already are with the blessings of our Congress.
Yep, thank you. Thank you for that. So if I am correct.
I hope they let what's-his-name at the Federal Reserve know that he needs to print some more money.
Oh, my God.
To keep up. I shouldn't be. I'm not laughing because it's funny. I'm laughing because I don't know what else to do.
Yeah, I don't know what else either.
It's just so predictable, unfortunately.
So short of taking all of your money out of your IRAs and your, you know, any holdings that you have and buying gold with it, what do you do?
Well, I could give you a few suggestions. Besides gold, how are you prepared to take care of your family if our financial system collapses? How are you going to feed them and how are you going to defend them? So there are some places where you can put your money, put it into making sure that you have food to feed your family stored, that you have weapons to protect your family in case somebody wants to come and take from you what you have. Because if we have a financial collapse, it could get really ugly really fast. And the way back is not going to happen overnight. It's going to be very difficult. And, you know, it's interesting. I've been seeing more and more in the news across the state and around the country, there are more and more people breaking into people's homes and taking things. Crime is on the increase. And I think it has something to do with the state of our economy and the fact that people are out of work, out of money, and they can't feed their families. And you know, I think it's if we continue down this road, that's just going to get worse. So,
yeah, I don't know where to go.
Gold is a good investment. Gold is a hedge against inflation. And right now, I think that people ought to be very concerned about taking their money and hedging against inflation. If we have a huge stock market crash like we had back in 1929 during the Great Depression or worse, your 401ks and all of your investments are going bye-bye. And the cost of things, because of what the Fed is doing and digitizing our debt, monetizing our debt, does not end well for us. It means that inflation will go through the roof, and it brings to mind the Weimar Republic in Germany when they did the exact same thing, and pretty soon people were getting wheelbarrows of money at the end of the day from their jobs to go buy a loaf of bread. And if you think it can't happen here, you're a fool. And you don't understand that history repeats itself, and that when we're doing exactly the same things that other nations have done that have led to exactly those types of consequences.
Man.
And we need to, you know, Lisa, I really believe that people need to be thinking about not only what they can do to help stop what's happening in our country and to get us back to the constitutional republic we are and to smack down the government and put it back in its place and get it functioning the way it was supposed to, but we're in a mess. I mean, even if we do all of that, we still have to deal with the consequences of the debt that we've allowed to be created by our government. We're going to have to pay those debts back. We've got to get a handle on it, because if we don't, we will see a complete collapse of our financial system.
It's just frightening. Actually, we're going to have Dr. Duane Weed on next week to talk about just that very thing, about how to deal with some of the financial issues that he's been on with us in the past. To talk about preparedness issues, he's got a lot of great information, a great website, and he's going to actually come on with us next week to talk about some of those things. I just kind of want to tick off real quick. It's easier to read the short list of the names who voted against the debt limit increase in this Congress, in the House, than it is to read the others. So those who voted against the debt limit increase are Louis Gohmert of Texas, Trey Gowdy of South Carolina, Ted Poe of Texas, Justin Amash of Michigan, Michelle Bachmann of Minnesota, and that's it. Oh, those are just a few. Let's see, I'm reading this Blaze article. Oh, Republicans who voted. Go ahead.
Is this on the House vote?
Yeah, this is the House vote. Republicans who voted for the clean debt limit increase include Boehner, big surprise there, Dave Camp, Eric Cantor, Daryl Issa, Peter King, Ken Calvert, Howard Coble, Chris Collins, Charlie Dent, Michael Fitzpatrick, Michael Grimm, Doc Hastings, Frank Lobiondo, Kevin McCarthy, Buck McKeon, Patrick Meehan, Gary Miller, Devin Nunes, Dave Reichert, I'm reading this on my iPhone and type is very small, Hal Rogers, Peter Roskam, Ed Royce, John Runyon, John Shimkus, John. Oh, yeah, John Chambers. He's in Illinois. He's a Republican in Illinois. Big, yeah, but they don't have those in Illinois. I think is what I understand. There is no such thing as Illinois Republican. Chris Smith, Dave Valadeo, Richard Hanna, and Frank Wolf. Those are all supposed to be Republicans who voted for the. Oh man, this is just so bad. It's just so bad. I don't know where we're going to go with it. Okay. All right.
It's well. Yeah, and quite frankly, you know, the really sad part is that they couldn't have done it without those votes.
Exactly. All Republicans. All conservative Republicans.
They gave it, and you know, we need to remember this when everybody's talking about people. Stop forgetting and stop making excuses. And talking about, you know, they vote right part of the time. Remember these very important votes that these types of Republicans always abandon us on and always lead to bigger government and a worse situation for our country and for our children's futures. And stop letting the Republican Party blackmail you into supporting and voting for people who are less than they should be. That is not a winning strategy. That is not going to save our country.
Yeah, you know, it absolutely. And it really just comes down to folks needing to be engaged. You know, the Tea Party was a great thing. It really woke people up, and it really brought a lot of people back into the political sphere that were not. But I mean, it is not enough, folks. And, I mean, we are literally going over the cliff, and what we need to do as a conservative movement, a grassroots movement, because the Republican Party's not going to do it. They're in it for their own benefit. But the grassroots movement has got to get together and start reaching out beyond their sphere and find a way. I mean, you know, we have all of the tools that we've never had before. We've got to find a way to start educating the larger public, and they're going to start feeling it, too, with Obamacare anytime soon. Regarding this, once the Obamacare issues kick in, depending on whether or not Obama writes more executive orders to delay the implementation of it, but which was a great little thing that happened yesterday. Oh, you know what? I heard that they have initiated impeachment proceedings against Obama. Now, we all have to understand that nothing's ever going to come of it if we don't hold the Senate, but at least somebody is talking impeachment. Thank God. I thought they didn't know what that word meant in Washington, D.C. So...
I think you do have to wonder, but that is a good thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't think that word was in their vocabulary there, but anyway, we've got to start reaching out and becoming engaged and start engaging more people, because the 2014 elections are crucial that we gain the Senate, and then once we gain the Senate, we have to hold people's feet to the fire to make sure that impeachment is a word in their vocabulary, because if we don't do something, I can't even imagine keeping Obama in office till 16. There won't be anything left of our country.
And Lisa, instead of focusing on states and races that we can't win, because most of these Republicans who voted to raise the debt ceiling in the Senate, for example, come from very left-leaning states anyway. And so, but there are people who are running for office right now. McConnell has a big race against him, and there's another there are good people running against them, and if we could unseat some of those people, it would be a huge, huge coup for the conservatives in this country.
I think I heard Roy Blunt, who I don't follow Roy Blunt faithfully, as some Republicans do. He's not my favorite person, actually. But, I mean, I think the Republicans are starting to be hopeful about the ability to take the Senate in 14. Now, I don't know if that's a possibility, but I think that they feel that this Obamacare issue is big enough and that there are enough people out of work and feeling the pain that they think that they can get the Senate in 14. Here's the rub, because most of the people inside the Beltway don't want, even if they have the ability to do so. Well, in Missouri, we have a veto-proof majority in our House and our Senate that we can override anything the governor anything the governor decides to throw back at him. And we don't have the the horsepower to get it done. The Republicans here in Missouri are a bunch of wimps. They, you know, they're divided. They're rhinos. They won't push back against the governor. And I think that we would have that very same situation in Washington, D.C. if people, you know, I mean, if enough people don't get angry enough and indignant enough to make a noise. I mean, we had this, I had an interview a couple weeks ago with Dr. Randy Tobler, who had Blaine Lutkemeyer on his radio show, and it was a big dust up here in Missouri about Blaine Lutkemeyer doesn't like, you know, he doesn't want to talk impeachment. He hates the Tea Party. He doesn't, they don't want to do anything the Tea Party wants to do, or the grassroots movement. And, you know, it's just got to stop, folks. We can't continue down this road for two more years after the midterm elections, because there won't be anything left. It'll absolutely be gone.
We not only need to win elections this year in the Senate and so forth, Lisa, we need to win them with the right people. And we need to develop a strategic approach to some of this. And the Republicans are against these people who are in primaries against some of these incumbent Republicans like Mitch McConnell. And I think it's Scott Bevin. His last name is Bevin.
Uh-huh.
There was a big dust-up this week with him that – you know, they were trying to say that he had done something unsavory as a CEO and with stock trading and so forth and so on. And it was all lies, and that's already been exposed.
Yeah, it's probably coming from the Republicans. The Republicans
are trying
to sabotage him.
Bevin didn't back down on that. He didn't blink. He came out swinging. He said exactly, you know, he set the record straight. He showed the lies for what they were. And they've had to back away from the story. And, you know, they don't, and McConnell has a lot of money to throw, but Bevin really does have a fighting chance against him, which is just amazing to me. And
wouldn't that
be awesome? We need to get behind some of those people. And I've heard this man interviewed several times, and he's the real deal. If he can stay the real deal or not remains to be seen, but at least
he's
got to
be better than McConnell.
It would send a huge message to get someone like Mitch McConnell to get them out of office in a primary. That is where we will win. That is the only political strategy that is going to work for us at this point. Once it comes down to the November elections, you're out of options. So you better start fighting now. You better start figuring it out now. And even if you can't get behind somebody in your state, look at races like this one with Mitch McConnell, between McConnell and Bevin.
Yep, send them
get
some money.
Get involved there. Send your money to them. Do not give money to the Republican Party. You pick and choose the candidates that are going to get your money.
Absolutely. And I think the Republican Party is hurting for money anyway. So, and that's fine with me.
And that's fine. You know, that's fine.
Yeah.
They need to be hurting for money because they keep doing the same thing over and over again. They're as much the powers that be within the Republican Party are as progressive or headed in that direction as the Democrats are. They are not going to fix our country. They're not going to establish a better country for our children and our grandchildren. They have made that abundantly clear.
Anytime you want to question that, just follow John Boehner's voting record.
Correct.
That should make it abundantly clear. Okay.
Let's look at the votes this week on the debt ceiling and the fact that they won't take the fight to the president.
Absolutely. And we'll be watching them on immigration as that comes down the pike, too. That just, oh, man.
Yeah.
Amazing. Okay. I guess we should probably wrap things up because I think we've probably beaten this one to death. As I said before, next week we're going to have Dr. Dwayne. That's okay. That's why we have you here. Because we need that kind of commentary. Next week, Dr. Dwayne Weed's going to come on, and he's going to talk about some of the financial aspects of what's going on in the country, maybe help you hedge against this financial disaster a little bit, talk a little preparedness with him. We'll have all that information for you next week. And the one thing that we didn't cover tonight, you know, out of all of the other things that are going wrong with the country, is Common Core. Next week in Missouri, there's a rally for excellent education, not common education, on Tuesday, February 18th at the Missouri State Capitol. I think things start rolling down there about 10 a.m. They're having seminars. They're having speakers. And it's your opportunity to go down there and march in the hallways and let these people know. They had an opportunity last legislative session to put a wrench in the cogs of the Common Core situation, and they didn't do it last year. There are several bills floating around in the Missouri legislature this year that could help to eliminate Common Core and send a huge message to the federal government that we will not go along to get along. We don't care about your stupid federal money. We're not going to follow and put our kids under that kind of scrutiny with all the data collection and everything. If you don't know about what Common Core is all about, we're going to have somebody on next week with us to tell you about it. There's a teacher that I know who will remain anonymous. We're not going to reveal her identity, but she has agreed to come on to talk about what Common Core really is from the inside. You're going to get a teacher's perspective about what's really going on in classrooms, what they're being told, what they're required to teach kids, how the kids are reacting to it, and maybe talk a little bit too about what, you know, if you've got young adult children going through college thinking about education as a career, we're going to talk about the career aspects of Common Core too and what it's doing to the teaching career. Lots of great information. She's agreed to speak with us very candidly about these things. Really appreciate her coming on. This should be a great segment. So, you know, you've heard probably a lot about Common Core and what it's, you know, how it's being implemented, how it got started. But you're not going to hear this perspective anywhere, folks. This is going to be great. So I hope you'll be with us next week. I want to thank Mark Messmer and Jackie. Jackie Walker, excuse me, I still have my cold, but it's almost gone. Jackie Walker for being on with us tonight to give us this great information about the militarization of the police forces across the country. And I especially want to thank Cindy McGee for her wonderful, colorful commentary. Wouldn't be Culture Vigilante without Cindy McGee. I thank you for being on with me tonight, Cindy.
You're welcome. I enjoy it. I do. And thank you for the opportunity to sit in and to share and to, you know, hopefully add some beneficial perspective to what's going on. You know, I hope we can get to the stories about the terrorist attack in California on the on their electric grid and also.
Well, let's talk about that before we go, because we do have a couple minutes. And that is something that I forgot to talk about. But, yeah, we do. So, yeah, a couple of weeks ago, there have been stories floating around about somebody shooting up the grids in California, but it goes a little farther than that.
Yeah, they did. They attacked a substation in California. There were six of them. They were using high-powered rifles. And once they caught, initially in the investigation, they just called it vandalism, and it wasn't vandalism. It was a military attack on that substation. They used high-powered rifles. They took that substation out. It took a couple of months to get it back online, and it could have been much worse than it was, but it was bad enough. And there was plenty of evidence that it was a very well-orchestrated attack done in a very military style, very militaristically. Now, They're calling it a failed attack. I don't think that's true, and I think that we need to remember that terrorists are notorious for doing dry runs in what they're doing. And when I was reading that story, it reminded me of what happened in Boston back in the spring. There were two incidents in Boston that involved their water supply. One was someone went into the Boston Aqueduct in Framingham. It's about 20 miles out of Boston, and they cut three of the four padlocks at the separate hatches were cut, and there was evidence found of an attempt to cut the padlock on the fourth one. No one's ever been caught or found that was involved with that, but it's very concerning that someone was doing that, and then in the same time frame, they had seven chemical engineers from Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, and Singapore that were caught trespassing at the Quabbin Reservoir in Massachusetts, one of the largest man-made public water supplies in the county. And they let those people go. The state police were actually pretty upset because even though there was nothing found on these people, in all honesty, to indicate that they are involved with terrorists, the bottom line is that they were found in the middle of the night trespassing
yep.
at this water reservoir. And the state police were upset because there's a law that if it involves a high interest target and trespassing, that they should have been prosecuted for that, for trespassing on that property, because with all of the things that are going on, that is a high interest target, and it's very important that be protected. And I don't think it's a coincidence that there have been these incidents around the country, and these are only the ones that we know of, which are being vastly underreported. But people need to be paying attention to this stuff and demanding answers.
Yeah, and let me guess, they walked away, right? Nothing
Absolutely.
Happened.
They were never even arrested. They were just they were told to appear for a court hearing, and then the county the county, someone in the county decided not to pursue the warrants and to pursue the charges with the trespassing charge. And the state police were very upset about that because of their involvement in trying to protect. And this incident at the water reservoir, the one with the padlocks being cut, that
mm-hmm.
happened just hours Or was it? No, I'm sorry. I believe it was actually. It was just several hours after the Boston bombing, at the.
For the Boston Marathon.
Yes, Boston Marathon. Thank you. I couldn't think of what that event was called.
Oh, they just bombing really, that happened.
Getting
in
old really isn't for sissies. yeah, it happened just hours after the Boston Marathon. So it's concerning. It really is that these things are happening, and they aren't even pinging on the radar. And these are things that would have been huge stories at one time.
Yeah. Well, the mainstream media is not covering any of it.
Absolutely
they're not,
not
covering any of it. And that's the thing. I mean, that's the thing. It's just more crucial than ever for folks. I mean, even if folks, if you print stories off of your computer and go stuff them in your next door neighbor's mailbox or stuff them in their front door so that they can start reading this stuff, or accidentally leaving something at the water cooler so stuff is starting to spread around, you've got to start reaching out beyond just the folks that you know are engaged. Because it's like when Mark was on a little while ago, we had an issue here in St. Charles County where we voted out our sheriff and because of the wording on the ballot, I mean, these people know what they're doing. They know how to manipulate the situation. And most of us that have been floating around, busy raising our kids, not fully engaged, are so easily manipulated, we don't even know what government is doing half the time because we're not completely engaged. So this is just one great example. There are so many of how, you know, it is easy just to miss the nuances of what's going on right under your nose. And it's just, it's so important. It's so important to be engaged. And, you know, and it's like what you said, Cindy, how many times, you know, did they, before they actually bombed the World Trade Center in 2011, there were other attempts. You know, the terrorists do have a track record of coming in and testing the waters before they go in and do their complete big deal terrorist acts. And,
right.
you know, if they hit the power grids,
that's right.
we're sunk. You know, they've got
it. And hitting the power grid can be a very big thing. If they hit it the right way, you think of everything in your life is controlled, is impacted by whether or not the electricity keeps going. Everything, shipping to your grocery stores, down to the basics that you have in your own home, your water supply, your heating, your cooling, everything depends on the electric grid staying up. And if they can take that down, they can send us back to the dark ages in the blink of an eye.
Oh, real quick.
It would be
quick.
The equivalent of an EMP. And I need to correct something. It was not the water reservoir situation in Massachusetts. It was this attack on the California, this terrorist attack on the California substation that happened a handful of hours after the Boston Marathon bombing. I was wrong. I needed to correct that. It was the incident involving the substation in California that was attacked by six
okay.
terrorists. So, but it's very, you know, I think it was, I'm beginning, you know, after just, we just need to be paying attention, Lisa.
Yep, absolutely.
And we need to try to hold people accountable and get the word out, you know, when we see these things. And it's interesting that this story about the electric substation in California, that attack is coming back to the surface again and being revisited by some alternate news agencies,
yep.
like
yep.
The Blaze and some others are starting to cover it again. So.
You know, one thing I would kind of like to throw out there, not to toot our own horn here, but, you know, we have a conservative radio station here in the St. Louis area, and they do a pretty good job of getting some of the news out and stuff. But they, you know, just like most other media outlets, I think have their bias and they have their, you know, they're kind of run by different things. You know, their bosses there are part of the RCGA, and they're you know, they've done some things that I would not agree with as a conservative. And maybe not covered some issues, maybe because it's not politically expedient for, you know, their corporation to handle certain things. And they do, you know, they advertise with some things that I don't consider conservative things. Let's talk about alternative media. So here we are on Blog Talk Radio. Internet radio is may not have hit its stride as it will someday, but this, you know, these kinds of things, alternative media is what's going to change things. It's what's going to turn things around. Sharing a link from this show with the people on your email address list is so easy to do, and it gets information out that the mainstream media is not going to cover. We don't answer to anybody. You know, this is Missouri Grassroots Coalition. We're volunteers here. We're not answering to anybody. We're putting out the information from as grassroots folks that we think is important for you to know. We don't have that kind of restriction or that kind of bias to deal with. You know, you're just getting the raw stuff for you to process and you decide. And you can share this information very easily. And what we need to do is, one way to broaden our reach is for you to take the initiative to take the link from this show and share it with your email friends, your email list. Tonight's show was very, very informative on a couple of issues that, you know, I've never seen these issues in the mainstream media covered this way, this frankly, you know, with this kind of research. And I don't think you're going to. And next week, I mean, we'll have a great interview with a teacher who's going to talk about Common Core from the inside out that you're never going to hear in the mainstream media, because somebody is brave enough to come forward. You know, we can keep her identity anonymous to where it's not going to hurt her, but you're going to get the straight stuff on it. So, folks, this is the way to do it. Take the link from tonight's show. You can go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click the radio tab, and all of our shows are listed there, and you can share all of those links. You can share the link to the whole radio page for folks. There's tons and tons of great information there. I hope that you will take the time to do that, because that is one way that you can help to get the word out and to be active and engaged.
And if you're trying, you know, and if someone is trying to talk to someone about the situation with the militarization of the police, there's a tremendous amount of information provided tonight by Jackie and by Mr. Messmer.
Mark.
Mark, that was just phenomenal information, and they backed it up. They've done their research. They knew what they were talking about, and you could get someone to listen to that, and I don't think that they would be bored in hearing about what's going on and at least get them to thinking about it and to
right.
processing that we have a problem.
Absolutely. Okay.
And the neat thing is that the program is recorded, so you can listen to it at your convenience.
At your convenience and as many times as you want. So it's right. always there for you. All right. Okay. So we are going to wrap it up now. We're almost at the end of our time here. Do want to let you know, Dave Cord is on Friday and Saturday nights. He talks about the fair tax, and then he talks about that thing that I don't agree with that you shouldn't pay attention to, but you know, they're promoting the Article 5 convention. But he's on Friday and Saturday nights talking about those things. And
Cynthia Davis.
Thank you, Cynthia. I'm actually chatting with my Patriot Nation friends while I'm talking to you on the air. Cynthia Davis is on Tuesday nights at 8 o'clock. She has always got a great show, so tune into her. And again, all of those things are podcasted. You can listen to those things in perpetuity after the show airs. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Join us on Facebook and join us on our webpage. We send out grass fire alerts occasionally when there are issues of great interest to talk about, you know, legislative alerts, anything like that. And follow me on Facebook and Twitter.
I think Lisa wrote the book on multitasking.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing, actually. I'm multitasking tonight.
That's what that's called. chatting on Facebook, conducting a radio show, and multiple other things. So
yeah, trying to. Okay.
Lisa, that's
yeah.
pretty awesome. I'm impressed.
Thanks. Oh well, yeah, you can hear the hiccups in the role, but we're going with it. So anyway,
hey.
Follow me on Facebook and Twitter. Look for Culture Vigilante. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. I'm there on Facebook and Twitter as well, and I'm also an admin at the Patriot Nation. That's a great site too, folks. If you want to catch us there. And until next week, Wednesday evening, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, Cindy and I are going to go our separate ways and join again next week with our long list of links to follow and stories to talk about. And thank you for being with me again, Cindy, and we'll talk to you again on Wednesday.
All right.
Good night.
Good night.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.